Well, welcome everyone to the next installment of our Channel Masters iPad webinars. So, topic today is advanced partner financials, and we're going to go into a little bit more detail than what we covered in the original first session that Marlene had done before the program started. So, this is going to be kind of that next step. Again, the focus is going to be a little bit more, not just on the concepts, but on the impacts to partners. So we'll talk a little bit about how that impacts programs, how that impacts their infrastructure, how that impacts their overall profitability. So I promise that there are a lot of numbers in here. I will try and make the numbers as exciting as possible. Again, our focus is not on trying to teach you guys to be financial experts. The whole goal of this is to try to get you to make sure you do understand the financial aspects of a partner's business in order for you to be able to build programs as well as, understand what you do and how it impacts what they do in terms of their overall business, whether it be from a program, whether it be from a value proposition, et cetera. I know we've done a lot of work in this area, and I know some of you have seen some of the profitability studies that we've done. We're not going to go into that detail here. That will be covered in some of the other sessions. So welcome. And again, if you have questions as we're going through, happy to do that. We do have time at the end to answer a few questions as we go. So welcome. So here's our agenda. Number one is I'm going to go through a quick overview of some of the material you've already seen. I promise to try and cover that fairly quickly, but just to make sure you got an understanding of kind of the basics. The next thing we're going to spend time going through is, in our session, we spent a lot of time talking about a very specific one-partner model type. What I'm going to do today is actually expand that a little bit and start to show you what actual partner financials tend to look like by the various partner types. Okay? We also will go through some specific examples, so show you some the examples of actual partners, what they look like, what their P&Ls look like. So we're going to actually go through and do that from specific examples. Then what we'll do is talk about financial concepts. Some of these are things that people don't always want to ask questions because they think we should already know this, but we will show you a simple way to start to think about kind of the concepts of margin versus discounts and how that works, because that totally plays into what margins the partner is actually achieving on their business. I do want to spend a little time talking about rep compensation. I know this is incredibly important to many of you in terms of, how the reps actually get paid for working with you on your product lines. So we'll talk a little bit about kind of how that works, what they look like, what their models tend to look like, et cetera. And then we can get a lot of questions around discounting and special pricing. It's like, how does that work? What tends to happen there? What I'm going to do is spend a couple minutes talking to you about what that looks like from the partner side. And then we'll talk a little bit about kind of some of the, kind of bring it back together and say, what does that look like from an impact program? So we got some information around that. And then we'll have time for Q&A. Okay? So, again, for those of you that might have some background noise, *6 to mute your phone and *7 to unmute it. If I see a lot of noise, I'll try and do that myself. But if you could do that, that would be great. Okay, so let's jump in. Let's go through some of the overview stuff really quick. Number one, so hopefully through these sessions that we've been conducting, you've gotten an understanding of why we actually have to talk about this. All right, and again, there's a lot of detailed information around P&Ls and SG&A and recurring revenue and gross margins and cost of sale, et cetera, et cetera. Obviously, the main purpose of how we and why we talk about this is that essentially, partners are there to run their business, and most of them run their business on a gross profit, gross margin basis, which is radically different than we as vendors typically run our business. So in the vendors, it's typically most compensation plans, most methodologies about how you drive revenue or how drive your business tends to be on the revenue basis as opposed to more of a profit basis. I know some vendors are further along in that area, but for the most part, that's typically how vendors operate. And again, why it's important, obviously, is that from a partner perspective, if you look at their overall business in general, and this is a rule of thumb, and it changes radically by how good a partner is and what they do, but fundamentally, most partners kind of operate on that two-thirds of their revenue is typically coming from the sales of some sort of products, no matter what. And what kind of products they are, that can be as a service products, but it's basically the resale of a product. whereas typically two-thirds of their profit is driven from the services that they create and deliver. Okay, and again, the reason we talk about this and why we want to spend so much time on this is that, you know, when we talk to the partners, and you saw this in the session as well, is that many of them come back and say that, you tell me about the great speeds and feeds and why you're good and bad, but what you don't talk to me about enough is the business opportunity associated with it, which to them translates into kind of a financial model. So that's why we do this. The other reason that we talk about this is feedback that we've gotten from partners around, well, how well do these, because the vendor channel managers are the ones they talk to. So how well do you believe that vendor channel managers truly understand the profitability of partners? The good thing is that, you know, 15% understand it completely, and approximately half of them, 40%, you know, believe they have some understanding or understand most of the factors associated with the profitability of companies. That's good, of partners. The bad news is that literally 40% or more have very limited understanding. So the way you can look at it in two ways. One is half your team is really good at this. The other side is half your team is really bad at this. So having, you know, a better understanding, so when you're building programs or rolling out initiatives and incentives and things to the channel community, you know, making sure that you have an understanding of what an education of the CAM so that they understand that as well will be important. So as you start to think about programs, when you're talking about this, make sure that there's an element for the channel managers so they are clear about this as well. And we showed you this before. Again, we try to bucket this into three main areas, pre-sales, sales and post-sales, and typically we look at it in three main buckets. For those that you have seen some of the webinars around profitability, you know, on the product side, that's typically in the 5 to 40% when you look at their overall gross margin. And again, depending on what the products are, so if you have commodity-based products, tend to be on the low end. Very complex enterprise-class products tend to be on the higher end. On the project services, again, that typically is where it's typically time and materials. It usually has a beginning and an end date. We typically see gross margins in the 20 to 60%, somewhere in that range. Obviously, on the higher end, that typically is more very, you know, sophisticated services, et cetera. I think someone has their hand raised. Is that Greg?
Yes, it is Greg. Just
hey,
a question.
Greg, how are you?
Let me undo that. When you show managed services in the same bucket as the other two, which seem to be more oriented to capital acquisition versus something that would be paid over time, such as managed service, how do you calculate the margins, or would you pay out up front on a managed service? So if they're reselling a vendor's managed service, do they expect to be paid out up front?
Okay, so and this is something that we'll cover on the MSP thing tomorrow in detail. So we look at managed services in three main buckets, because you have, quote-unquote, managed services resale. So that's basically, they're not really doing anything. They're just reselling the managed services of the vendor. Okay? That typically looks like product resale. Second bucket we have is we have the bucket that says it's partner managed. So that means they don't necessarily own or resell the assets. They're selling the managed service on top of whatever's out there. So that can be some of its managed services. Some of it's just equipment that they're managing. Some of it's support. It's all bundled in. The third is when I actually, what we call partner-owned, where I fundamentally take ownership of the asset, whether it be a laptop or whether it be a data center solution, and then I, as an MSP, and them selling that out to the marketplace in a service offering. As you can expect, going from left to right, the profitability associated with one versus the other is radically different, and the one on the far right requires a lot of capital acquisition and upfront costs. Right, so that's a huge part of what happens in an MSP model. The financials are still the same in terms of how you calculate gross margin. That's still the same. What did I sell it for? What was the cost associated with it? Therefore, what is my gross margin? But they're very different. And then you have to throw in the account of, okay, if I'm buying equipment, how do I finance it? How do I handle it? We'll get into that discussion tomorrow.
Okay. And then so on the first one, the simplest one, where they're just reselling the vendor's managed service,
yep.
Is the expectation, because you said it's like product, is the expectation they're paid up front when they deliver the contract, or do they participate in a ratable type revenue?
In general, so this is a generalization, most MSPs are now trying to match how they sell to the customer with how they buy from the vendor. Okay? So they're trying to get that aligned up. So if they're selling to the customer on a recurring revenue basis, typically, their preference, for the most part, is to be able to purchase on that same model. So take Amazon as the biggest example, right? If I'm selling Amazon on a, you know, on a hourly basis, I'd like to be able to buy it such that and sell it through that way. And there are some vendors that are actually applying and getting into that model so that they can do it that way. If I'm expecting upfront payment, then therefore I can sell it that way as well. So that's the general rule, though, is connect the dots. And that's what they typically are looking for when we talk about utility-based or subscription-based programs and how they match to what the MSP is looking for. Does that make sense?
Yep. Okay. Thank you.
Yes, Lisa.
Hi, Mark. Excuse me for interrupting, but just a point of clarification. The session you're referencing tomorrow is the profitability research, the MSP cut, but that's being shared with our newest Channel Masters class that just completed the program or started the program last month. This group on the phone has had access to the MSP cut of that data. If anybody on the call missed it, it should be available to you in your portal. And or if you'd like to join us for tomorrow's call live with Mark, again, you're more than welcome to do that. Just send me a note and I can forward that invite to you just to make sure everybody's clear on what's happening tomorrow.
Great. Thanks for clarification, Lisa. It's always great to have someone that knows in the middle of this. Thank you. Yeah, and again, if you go back and look at it and you look at the video or you can't join tomorrow, if you see something, obviously we're happy to add clarification. So if you have questions, get back to Lisa and we will do our best to get to you. Okay, so I'm going to keep going. So again, you know, looking at how the business structure typically works, and I know you guys have seen this, so I'll go through this quickly. Typically what we find out is that we're really good at this part. We have a really good understanding of kind of what the target audience is, what these folks do, how their business operates, what do they deliver. We typically are pretty good at that. Typically where we fall down as a vendor community is around this aspect of it, the whole business aspect. We tend to, you know, we tend to have a good understanding of what we do, like how much our products generate, you know, how much revenue, how much gross margin that we get from that or the partner gets from that. We typically have a good understanding. The reality is, though, what we forget about is we are typically only a piece of the puzzle. And we don't always understand kind of the details around, well, hey, you got a 20% gross margin. That's great. But wait a second. Now that I got 20% gross margin, that's just the starting point for the partners. Because after that, right, that's where they have to actually pay everything, whether pay their sales reps, their managers, their staff, their, you know, their location, their, you know, technology, et cetera. That all has to come out after the gross margin. So a lot of times what we don't have a great understanding of is essentially how does that all fit together in terms of your impact as a company on their overall gross or their overall operating income. And again, I think we showed you this before, and it talks about, hey, is there a better way for us to talk about this as it relates to the way we drive programs with those partners? So we typically have, you know, very good at talking about, let me show you how I can help you drive sales of my products. But are we good at telling them how, through the working with our products or our solutions, that we can actually drive more of what they do in their business and how they deliver it? The other thing is we don't spend a lot of time trying to think about the impact that we have on their cost of goods sold. So if we're providing resources to allow them to deliver better services, better direction, we should be taking credit for that. We should be telling them how we're saving them time, money, and energy associated with the ability to deliver a higher quality product, which therefore typically can, you know, reduce their overall delivery expenses. And again, and just how it works, going through the SG&A, what are you doing to help them on that side in terms of, you know, support, in terms of ease of doing business? This is where funded head things and things like that go into place. So, again, the whole having a clear understanding and ability to communicate and build programs based on how you impact each of those areas. I'm not going to go through all those. So typically if you look at the way – partner looks at this, you got to think of them as a business, right, as a business owner. And this is typically the same of a business owner. And again, if you're talking about big partners, this will be a departmental leader, right? If you think about it, they tend to drive their overall business based on gross margin percentage or gross margin dollars. The other thing, which I'll talk about in a minute, is typically the reps within these organizations are almost exclusively, not always, but almost paid on basically what their gross margin percentage dollars are that they're generated. So if I sell something, right, as a partner sales rep and the margins are below certain levels, oftentimes they don't get paid. So you got to think about how that impacts. And at the end of the day, what kind of G&A, what kind of operating income do most of these partners generate? And typically what we see is somewhere in the 5 to 20 points, which we'll talk about some of the specifics in a minute. I left this in here for reference. So this is basically what are the key elements of the partner's P&L. So when we're talking about revenue, remember, when we look at the partner's revenue, it's everything that they sell, right? So whether it be hardware, software, professional services, managed services, et cetera. This is also where they account for program dollars, incentive dollars, rebates. That's income to them, so this is typically where they put that. On the cost of goods sold side, what that typically is basically whatever they bought the products are from, and they're reselling from you. So that's basically the hardware or software product costs. But it's also in a professional services environment, it's the cost of people delivering those services. So whatever the time and materials are associated with that, that's part of the COGS. And then if you look at the data, if they're doing an MSP model, so whatever the data center costs are not cost. And there's some more complex math associated with, you know, amortization and all that kind of stuff. I won't get into that because that's a lot more detail. But basically, what does it cost to own, operate, and manage their data center, right, typically comes out of this part of it. Typically comes out of cost of goods sold. Then you look at also what does it cost for them to develop their IP as more and more partners are starting to develop either applications or what integrations or their own intellectual property, the cost of that is in here. You can also, for the frontline people that are actually delivering technical training and skills development, actually falls into cost of goods as well. From an SG&A perspective, this is everything else essentially. So this is how we pay people, this is management, this is services folks, et cetera, et cetera. So that's where those numbers come from. So if you look at a very simple P&L, I mean, the way to look at it, obviously, is once you sell, they have a sales revenue, right? You pull out the cost of goods. That basically defines what their gross profit looks like. After that, they have the operating expenses, which basically you can look at sales, marketing, and G&A. After that, then comes their taxes and interest and depreciation. So that ends up driving their overall net profit. Typically, we focus on this line. In terms of the total operating expense, because that's where we can actually affect it. Your comments around, you know, what's the cost associated with them building out data centers, a lot of that comes into here because they have to depreciate the assets, but that's a different equation. But this is typically what we look at. I want to spend a little bit of time talking about balance sheets because in some cases it makes a huge difference. So you look at, you know, what they typically are looking at. A lot of times you have the accounts receivable piece of this. So, again, if this is something where, you know, it's not lined up and they actually have a lot of accounts receivable yet, you know, that's on a monthly recurring basis, but yet they've had to basically bring out and pay for all the equipment up front, that becomes a huge problem for them. Because essentially what happens is that starts to draw down their cash, and so their ability to actually purchase and drive more of their business gets caught up in the whole, you know, accounts receivable piece because they haven't been paid yet. So that's why a lot of times you'll see financing options become more important. So do you have programs that allow them to do that? If you do have a one-time charge to them and they're going to deliver it as a service, typically they want to be able to finance it. Or typically, like I said before, they want to be able to kind of get those aligned such that they are paying for it as they sell it to their customers. And this is where you get in. This is why you get it. It becomes a really difficult decision as to whether or not I build a data center, or whether I expand a data center, or whether I work with somebody else. So if you can see this, and remember our terminology, the strategic service provider. So that's what the blue is, and the green is everybody else. That's the community as a whole. So what we look at in terms of what they're delivering, what they're making decisions on. So do they build out their own? So, you know, again, typically the strategic service providers may have a little more of that, but they also realize that it's probably more profitable to them not to compete at the, you know, data center level, but a lot of times they want to compete at the management level. So that's a decision that they have to make and say, do I want to invest in the equipment and therefore compete at infrastructure, or do I want to invest at the management level, which might be a NOC or that might be other types of service offerings they have, and compete on the ability to manage the customer experience. So those are the decisions that they have to make. And, again, that falls right down into the balance sheet, is how much cash do they have to be able to support that, or how much financing and how much debt they can take on in order to do that. And that typically becomes a really detailed discussion, but usually partners that are bigger are capable to do that. what we found is that literally most partners at this point, if they don't have a data center in place, this becomes a very difficult equation. So just starting fresh and building out a new data center is probably not for most of the partners. But again, some of them will continue to do that, but they typically have a reason for it. So there's got to be some competitive advantage as opposed to just adding in more infrastructure to their system. Okay, so kind of do it. That was sort of a quick overview of what you probably have seen some of before. So now what we want to do is actually go through and start to talk about actual examples of how partners operate. In our workshop, we went through kind of a very specific view in terms of a hybrid MSP. So what we're going to do here is kind of cover the gambit of different types of partners and show you what that looks like. So let me do some definitions. So the first column is, so think about this in terms of the first column being basically product-focused VARs. So this is typically folks that are primarily reselling. You know, believe it or not, there's still a large number of partners that are still in this category. Even though they're trying to move, if you look at their overall P&L, that's where they typically sit today. Vast majority of their revenue typically is from reselling products, and their business model is very much predicated on product margin, which you see in a number of your businesses. The next, and typically their revenue mix, so if you look at their mix, it's 85% products versus 15% services. And if you look at the solutions-focused VARs, 70% product, 30% services. And typically what we see there is these are the ones where fundamentally solution sales are what drive their business. That's what the services, they're in their service delivery. And products typically are the catalyst for that. In other words, they typically don't have a business if they're not reselling something because there's nothing for them to provide a service on top of. Services-led companies are a little bit different. Services are what drive the overall business. Product resale is part of it, but it's not the primary driver, which you'll see that in their P&Ls. And then on the MSP side, they basically are using the products to create some sort of offering that they're selling as a service, whether they own it or just manage it. And again, typically, a smaller aspect of their business is product resale, because typically they're not reselling the product. They're either putting management on top of it or they are actually using it in the delivery of their service. So those are the definitions. So let me go through and actually show you what some of those numbers typically look like. So let's start with the kind of the product focus bars or typically the corporate resellers like CDW and folks like that. So from their perspective, on $100 of revenue, typically those partners have a cost of goods sold, so the cost of actually delivering their, and this is across their entire business, is typically somewhere in the mid to high 80%. So the actual gross margin associated with their business, so after they pay for what they bought, it's typically only in the mid-teens. So a big company like that might be 13, 14% gross margin, so they might be selling $1 million worth of product, but that to them is only worth $130,000. Then from there, they have to figure out, okay, now I have to pay my sales costs and general administrative, so I got to pay for my people, my lease, et cetera. So you can see at the end of the day, this is why many partners are trying to move out of this model and move over to the right as far as they can in terms of driving their business. Because at the end of the day, you know, 2% overall operating income is relatively small. So let me keep going and we'll talk about how this impacts. So if you look at more of the solutions-focused VARs, typically what they do, and again, these are the solution providers that products are still really important. That's typically a catalyst, but the services is a pretty significant portion of their business. Typically, they're in the gross margin range of around 25%, right? So just by adding in, you know, kind of 15% more product services versus product, essentially they're almost able to double their overall gross margin. Okay, so this is why you see folks saying, hey, I got to move from product resale into services. And then typically you have a little bit higher cost of sale because typically these are more, you know, bigger sales, or not necessarily bigger sales, but they're more complicated because I'm not just selling a product, I'm actually reselling an overall solution, which then forces them to have, you know, larger administration staff in terms of support, more management, more services, et cetera. At the end of the day, though, these folks tend to drive, although not a huge number, it's significantly better than folks in the product-focused area. And keep going on the services side, where it's primarily a purely services-led business. And again, you get large fluctuations in this side of the business. And the reason is because it all depends on what kind of services you're delivering. if all I'm doing is, you know, very technical services that's very commodity, these numbers are a little bit smaller. If I'm doing very, very high-end work, like, you know, data scientist kind of work, these numbers can be, you know, significantly higher. So this is, you know, just kind of a general middle of the road in terms of what they typically look like. So, again, you can see that driving, continuing to drive more services obviously improves their overall gross margin. There's typically a little bit higher cost, again, on the administrative side. A lot of times the sales side tends to be about similar, and that's but you're looking at potentially doubling your overall operating income. And, again, on the MSP side, again, wild variations because it can be whether you own the asset or whether you're basically reselling the asset can be very different. But typically they are somewhere in the 40 to 45% range overall, typically have higher cost because a lot of times what's happening is they're having to sell smaller deals, manage it going forward. So a managed service company that's actually been doing this for a while, these costs will be radically different because they're really good at it. They do tend to have higher costs, and at the end of the day, their operating income tends to be similar, again, except if they've been doing it for a long time and they're really good at it. So that's typically what companies like this look like. So this gives you sort of a business model structure by the various partner types. Let me now switch gears and talk about some actual partner examples because I think this kind of comes to light when you start to look at, you know, the actual specific partners. So, again, if you look at, you know, companies on the left, distribution, corporate resellers, those types of folks tend to be much, much lower on the gross margin perspective. The ones on the right obviously tend to be much, much higher. So let's talk to a couple of companies. Many of you are probably familiar with Logicalis. So Logicalis is actually a very large company. They have 4,000 employees across, you know, across the globe. And the reason I picked some of the larger companies is because their P&Ls are readily available so we can break it apart. Honestly, this does apply in terms of the overall structure to many partners that look this way. So we tend to look at it from a tell me what you're doing in terms of product resale and services and managed services. And that will tell me kind of what your business looks like. That's why we, you know, when we break these apart, we look at what their percentages are to kind of give you a perspective of how they're going to operate. But if you look at Logicalis, you can see that the revenue has been relatively flat. And basically what's happening is because they haven't been changing significantly, right, you can see that their overall gross margin hasn't changed a ton, right? So as they're going through this process, right, this is what they actually look like, and this is what they're actually focused on. Again, what they're trying to accomplish, which is why they're making these investments and making these changes, is they're really focused on moving away from their overall just normal product resale into, you know, more of a managed services and more of a services-based model. So they're in the middle of this transition. So at this point in time, still hasn't taken shape, which as you can see, right, they literally had less revenue, but they were able to generate greater profit overall because they're managing what their business looks like and they're managing their overall income. And as you can see, it's going up slightly, 1%, not a ton, but it is. And what will happen is over time, as these numbers get higher, then they'll have a more and more they'll have a higher gross margin as they continue to go forward. Presidio is interesting as well. Most of you probably are familiar with them. But this is what they look like. So essentially, they're a $2.7 billion company. They're public. And again, they're trying to do the same thing. So they're really trying to kind of move from basically a model from what typically looks like product resale, although most of you don't really realize that that's typically where most of their revenue is coming from. And yet their services is basically around 15%. Here's what's interesting, though. If you look at the gross profit on this, if you look at what their services are, if you down here at the bottom, so it's 21% gross profit on their overall services, which basically comes back and tells you that they're probably reselling a lot of services as opposed to delivering their own. So they're in the service business, but a lot of it's from reselling of vendor-based services and things like that because they don't have high gross margins associated with their overall profit margin. The other one is a product reseller, so CDW. I'm assuming you're all working with CDW. Obviously, they have been trying to make changes across the board. And if you look at what they've done, they've actually done a pretty good job growing their revenue. So there's a lot of interest in what they're doing and how they're operating. As you can see, they've actually made some significant progress in terms of driving their overall initiatives, which is to try and move more to more services. Again, when you're talking about numbers the size of that they have, where they're primarily primarily in the product resale business, 1% movement can make a huge, huge difference to them. So just looking through, here's what they're actually doing. As you can see, they're making pretty good progress in terms of driving improvement. The numbers, what's interesting with folks like this is the percentage numbers are not that big, but if you look at the overall dollar amounts, those actually translate into pretty big businesses. And I also included just some information relative to what their services look like as a percentage of their overall business. So you can see most of what they're doing is still reselling products. Obviously, they're trying to move into more of a services-based business, but again, most of what they're doing is still that. The other one I wanted to look at, so, is a comparison between the various product types, or the partner types. So we've been talking about an SSP model. So for those that you remember the details, we basically went back and said, okay, a SSP, right, so a strategic service provider typically is somewhere in the 40% product resale, 30% into project services, and 30% of their business is coming from managed services. So if we look at what the gross margin comparisons are, which is basically the health of someone's business and their ability to drive their business, as you can see, by being an SSP, you can literally drive somewhere between 10 to 15% higher margin by moving to that model. This is why you see most companies are trying, this is their goal. That's what they're trying to get to because that's where they believe they have that balance of got to sell products, I have project services, and I have managed services. But typically, this starts to look like a much more healthy company when you're looking at 25 to 30% overall gross margins. As to somebody that's in the product resale business, which they're in the kind of the mid to high teens, which is a much different business than what an SSP can look like. Okay, so let me pause right there. Does that make sense? Questions?
One quick question,
last
Greg, again. In regards to the product sales, is there a differentiation between software and hardware?
Yes, there is, but at this level, we don't make that differentiation, but in the details we do in terms of what they're selling. So if you look at what gross margins are, it really is more – so software and hardware is different, but commodity versus enterprise also makes a huge difference as well. So you can look at some commodity-based software versus that'll look like – the margins will look a lot like hardware margins versus very high-end software that'll look that'll be more in the 40 to 45% range. So there are situations, let me be clear, these are generalized. There are certain kinds of product resellers, and we've actually worked with a couple of vendors like this, where their product resell is at 41% gross margin. So they look just like this, but it's very difficult to get those folks to move to the project or managed services because they're like, I don't need to do that because I'm still getting 40 points of margin just by selling the product. So it becomes a different discussion depending on what they actually specifically look like. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Thanks.
Okay. All right, so let me keep going. So this next thing I want to talk about is some of the financial concepts that we tend to kind of get wrapped up in. So I'm going to go quick over some of these. This is just to kind of talk about some of the terminology. So sometimes we use different terminology to mean different things. We get a lot of discussion around deal profit versus margin versus markup. So let me just kind of go through, and you can use this as a chart that you can show others, because a lot of times it may not necessarily be us that doesn't understand this. It might be some folks within our organizations. So, again, if you're looking at what the gross profit is, we already shared that. That's a dollar perspective. When you look at gross margin, it's a percentage perspective. So it's basically the gross profit divided by the sales price. And then if you look at two things in terms of markup versus margin, a lot of times we use the term markup, right? So here's an example for something that, costs $4,000 and sells for $5,000. There's $1,000. So from a markup perspective, that's 25% because it's a percentage of the cost. Whereas we talk about margin, it's a percentage of the selling price. So when we talk about margin, this is what we're talking about as opposed to the markup. So let me also talk about this in terms of what's different between that and a discount. So let me just show a really straightforward example that kind of explains this. So we talk about discount, right? So there's four main aspects. What's the list price? What's the customer price? What does the partner pay for it? And what is it sold to at distribution? So assuming this is going through a two-tier model. So the discount that we typically offer, right, as vendors, is the discount to distribution, okay, which is different than the margin that a partner gets from the sale of those products, and you can either product or services. So the margin is actually a difference between what they sold it for and what they paid for it. So let me show an example. So if you have a $100 product, we talk about offering a 40% discount to the channel, which is great. But that 40% discount isn't necessarily a 40% discount or 40 points of margin to the partner, right? So if they sell it at a 15% discount off of list, and they basically, there's markup from distribution, right? So they buy it at 69, right, versus what you sold to a distribution at 60, then you end up with a margin of 19%. So a discount of 40% probably more like translates into that 20% margin for your partners. Obviously, it varies based on, you know, the commoditization, you know, how much distribution wants versus, you know, small companies are different than huge companies. Some people can keep the end price pretty consistent and some can't. So that gives you kind of an example and hopefully helps you kind of understand some of the differences between what that actually means. The other thing, how many of you heard of the rule of 78? Just pipe in, say yay or nay. Okay, this is a terminology that's typically used or has been used in the past in the telco world. But what this does is this really does share with you kind of this whole concept of the exponential potential for recurring revenue and why many of the partners are looking at this. So, simple question, right? So if I'm a partner and they add one new customer per month, right, one new customer a month at $1,000 per year, how much revenue do you think they end up with at the end of the year? Okay, is it $12,000? The reality is it's $78,000, right? So this is where that power of the exponential comes in because essentially, remember, they're adding in one customer a month that's generating $1,000 per month as you go through the year. So essentially, by adding one new customer a month at $1,000 per month, you end up with $78,000 in revenue in a given year. So this is why the partners like this model. It makes sense to them. And it drives huge profitability for them. The other thing that you can look at on this is that from an MRR perspective, that equates to about $12,000 a month, right? Assuming they get 100% renewal, so you can factor out renewals, which means they basically have, going into year two, they have $144,000 in annual recurring revenue. And just as you can think about it, as you start to do this every year, right, this is where these numbers start to get exponentially higher and why you can see that from a recurring revenue basis, right, especially if they're able to renew at high rates. That's what's driving a lot of how this model actually works. Another thing to be really cognizant of is how partner sales reps actually get paid. Some of you on the sales side probably know this really, really well, but those of you that aren't on the sales side, let me talk a little about how this works. And this varies dramatically. So typically, from a partner sales rep perspective, no matter what they're selling, because I told you that they typically run their business off gross profit, so revenue is important, but gross profit is what really drives the business. The reality is that most of these partners, the sales reps, have a very low base salary. So typically, and oftentimes, they have a recoverable draw. Now, this is different from some of the really, really, really big companies, but in general, this is typically how they work. A large portion of their comp is basically commission-based, and it's typically on some sort of percentage of gross profit. So if I sell a deal for, you know, 10 points of gross profit, or if I sell a deal for $100 and it costs $90 to deliver, I'm going to get paid on a 10%, not the 100. Typically, there are minimum GP requirements. So typically, there are, you know, they have to sell it at least 20 points or 30 or whatever the margin is, or they don't get paid. Usually, if the customer doesn't pay, they're penalized. So there's clawbacks and things like that. Typically, they don't have product goals for the most part. We wish they did, but most of them don't. And at the end of the day, back-end rebates typically don't apply to the sales reps. So typically what happens is when we have back-end rebates, good for the company, not necessarily good for the individual sales rep, unless these are consistent and can be applied to the business. But for the most part, they don't apply. So let's look at kind of how this works then from a deal perspective. So the folks that truly are capable of selling professional services, think about this. If I've sold $100,000 of revenue from a PS deal versus a product deal, and I had a gross profit on my PS deal of, you know, $44,000, and I had a 12% gross profit on the product deal, right, at a 22% commission, which is probably about what they typically make, as a sales rep, they're going to make almost $10,000 from the sale of professional services whereas they're probably going to only make around $2,500 from the sale of the product. So again, what would you chase? And if you do the math, right, so basically it takes about $370,000 in order to generate to equal the $100,000 of professional services and to equal the 44.5 in gross profit they're doing. So just a way to think about it. So the more that you can talk to them in your programs, right, and explain to them how this drives this part of their business, the more and more they're interested. Obviously, if you're talking to a company that's very product resale driven, right, this isn't as appropriate, but for most of the mid-tier partners that you're talking about, you know, that are moving to this business, the more you can explain this not only to the companies, but also to the reps, the better off, the better position you're in. The other thing that we always get discussions around is, well, let's talk about this concept of discounting. And I know probably none of you on the phone have this problem, but let's talk about this a second. So let's say we're doing a customer deal, right? And we're basically selling it. The deal size is $100,000. The partner gross profit, 20% overall, is $20,000. So if they're a rep that's getting paid off 25% commission of the partner gross profit, they're essentially in line to make about a $5,000 commission, okay? And so I know this has never happened before, but so then the customer comes in and says, hey, if I can just do, you know, get 5 more points off this deal, there's a real great opportunity that I can get this closed for you by the end of your quarter, and we're going to have a deal. Have you ever heard that before? I'm assuming yes. Then what happens, right? So then we get involved from the sales side and start talking to them and says, well, hold on a second. You know, we've already discounted this deal by 25 points. You know, I need you to have some skin in the game. I need you to take a little haircut. Why don't you just go ahead and take that 5% discount off of the list price, and let me go ahead and pass that on to you, and you have you do that because I've already discounted a ton. Here's what happens. We don't realize what that request turns into, okay? Because remember, right, if we take the new customer price of $5,000, the partner price didn't change, so therefore they're basically getting cut $5,000 out of the overall gross profit. And assuming that we have a rep that's getting paid 25% commission on that, essentially what's happening is you have on a 5% customer discount reduced the rep's reduction or reduced the rep's partner compensation by 25%. So anybody in sales, I mean, that's almost an affront to them if you basically go and say, hey, I want you to work with me on this deal, but I want to take 25% out of your pocket. That typically doesn't go well, but typically what we find is that many sales folks just don't understand that scenario. So something you can help them, educate them, and understand how you can make sure your programs aren't doing these kind of things. Because, again, you can do all this great work to get them all set up, motivated, and then you start doing this kind of thing to them, and all of a sudden, you know, what went from a very positive experience is into, hey, the reps are not willing or wanting to work with you. Okay, so let me then kind of translate this into, so what is it, what are, based on some of those things I just talked about, what are the impacts of programs? So obviously, as you can see, one of the big things they're trying to do from a profitability perspective is to try and drive to these services-based businesses. So whether it be a recurring revenue, which I'll talk about in a minute, or just services in general. So essentially what's happening is in order to improve profitability, they have to be able to do this better and more efficiently. Otherwise, it's very difficult for them to implement it. So anytime that you can come to them and say, hey, we have partner services programs that can help you with IP so you don't have to spend the money to invest in it. We're going to help you with mentoring so that you can do it right so there's no rework. If there's field engagement so that you can reduce the churn within the implementations, anything that can be done to help with that is actually very meaningful to them in terms of their overall profitability. So, you know, things like, hey, we have IP that can, you know, reduce 25% of the cost associated with delivering this. That actually means a ton to these folks as it relates to their professional services. We're also seeing program modifications that start to really reward services delivery, so actually higher up in the programs, greater margins associated with products if they actually deliver services. So the things that you can do to drive that actually really, really important. So the other part of this is around, okay, the partners are obviously driving to move to more of the recurring revenue model because, as you can see, the gross margins associated with those are obviously more important, obviously bigger. That's definitely what they're looking towards. So some of the things that are happening from a partner, from a program's perspective, is folks are really figuring out that they're going to have to adjust kind of the account equivalents for product versus services in these field sales models. What I mean by that is if you have an option of selling something as a product, or option of selling something as a service, what often tends to happen is in the field, the sales rep for the vendor might not necessarily be compensated at the same way that the sales rep is for a partner. Therefore, there becomes inherent conflict as to what should I sell to the customer that's going to maximize a compensation perspective. So you got to make sure that there's, you know, you look at that and understand, because that can be a huge problem. The other, which goes back to the discussion you were asking earlier, is around financing programs, right? So again, if there's a long recurring revenue model here, and they're having to float the accounts receivable, sometimes that can have that very negative impact into their overall program and their overall compensation. So by being able to add financing and sell that, either directly or through a third party, can help. Again, this is where the utility subscription models come in. So, you know, obviously it's not the upfront commission rate, but again, many of the partners are starting to recognize that they have to compensate their folks based on what the model looks like. So a successful managed services company may be compensating someone for a new account as well as a percent of the ongoing recurring revenue from that company. But again, that only becomes achieved through having utility and subscription-based models. And then the other thing is obviously the model's changing significantly, right? So as they move from product resale, it's not just about the financials. It's also around, okay, well, how do you actually change the sales motion from a resale motion into a land expand model? So what we're seeing is many of the vendors are starting to put together programs. One is around this whole concept, you know, of life cycle management. So this is the whole idea where, you know, you land a deal, that's great, but if you don't continue to expand it, that doesn't help much. So sometimes the partners are capable of doing this, sometimes they aren't. So we've seen two kinds of programs, one where there's actually a formal recognition of this role. There's training, certification, things like that. We've also seen some where the vendor will actually play that role for the partner. And again, that's a huge impact to their overall cost of doing business. So, you know, if they're just getting started in this model and they're trying to figure out how to actually make the financials work, they recognize that this is a critical part of the business, but they may not be able to afford to hire in order to manage that. So things that you can come forward and say, look, in the beginning, we can actually help you do that, and over time, we can train you to do it yourself, but in the beginning, there's a way for you to do it. Again, you know, the whole business transformation, we've talked about that for years. That's still continuing. Many companies still need this kind of help. And a lot of it's around the financials. A lot of it's around the whole, how do I get through this quote-unquote valley of death? How do I move from kind of an upfront business to recurring business without tanking my ability to actually sell or actually pay my bills as I go through that? The other is around, so because these roles are changing, you know, there's there's a push around simplified certifications. So how do I make it easier for folks to get certified? And there's also kind of this recognition of new roles. This is the thing we talked about in terms of in the class around operational education certification, not just implementation. So if my role is going to be an MSP and that's the model going forward, I might install it once, but I'm going to manage it all day, every day. So are you helping them kind of more from the operational perspective and education certification than just that? And then we're also seeing a number of incentive programs that are starting to recognize this. And they're getting creative, right? So if you look at, you know, the P&Ls of some of these partners, right? Like I showed you, some of these big partners still have a product resale model. So, you know, trying to get them to move to recurring revenue can be difficult. So we've seen companies actually, you know, adding product margin incentives to make these recurring revenue deals because, you know, many of you as vendors are trying to make this shift as well. But basically putting in incentives that are meaningful to the company that drive sea change, that are very different, you know, from what they're currently doing. So it still applies to their financials, and it says, look, I recognize that most of your revenue is still coming from the product resale. I'm going to give you higher incentives or higher margins if you sell this as a resale, as a recurring revenue model, as opposed to an upfront deal, and there's incentives to help you do that. So, again, those are some of the impacts of programs. Before we wrap up, let me stop and pause and say, do any of you have any questions? I know that was a lot to cover in a pretty short period of time. Well, again, for those of you that want to drive into more detail around the MSP program, we did some of that earlier. If you haven't, weren't able to attend that, that is out there on the portal. Again, we are doing this tomorrow, and if you are interested in more details, you can be more than happy to have you participate. And if you've gone through either or both of those and have questions, feel free to get to Lisa in terms of, you know, if I got specific questions around your particular company, we'll do our best to help you. So with that, appreciate it. Thanks for everybody's time. Anything else, Lisa?
Nope, I think that's everything, Mark. Thank you so much.
Great. Everybody have a great weekend. Nice talking to you, and we'll talk to you soon. See you later. Bye.